You're listening to All the Best, I'm Pip Rasmussen. Food isn't just a day-to-day necessity in our lives. It's a storyteller that can bring history and memory together in a single bite. Food can even stir a memory deep inside you for years after, whether it's your grandma's famous lemon meringue pie or trying your first Brussels sprout. This story comes from my boyfriend Luke and his family. We all sat on his mum's bed and talked about the time we visited Nambucca Heads, about 5.5 hours north of Sydney.
Shut up!
Oh, piece of shit.
So it's about eight at night. We're in Nambucca Heads. There is the entire Gerber clan and one Philippa Rasmussen. We've been driving around for probably half an hour, starving. We're so hungry. No other places are open, and then we happen upon this one place. We walk in. All the other places is like an RSL that's shut. This place is open. Looks good. Real proper gourmet fish and chips. The head chef sees us. He's like, "Hey, how are you going? Where are you from?" Really lovely. Sits us down. We're all ready to go. We're all, no one's speaking, we're just that exhausted. He hands us the menus. Everything's $30.
Mum looks at it and says, "We can't eat here." It's at the beginning of the holiday and I'm not going to throw my food budget on the first night's dinner.
But then we happen across the kids' menu.
Fishy dishy.
Fishy dishy. What we find is the fishy dishy, it was
affordable.
Oh,
Maddie was like, "Yeah, I'm down to go for the fishy dishy."
Yeah, Maddie and I were like, "We want the fishy dishy."
And then Mum, you were like, "I'm sorry, but we don't have the money here." And he was like, "Oh man, we'll do you discounts."
Yeah. But basically, he gave us the most delicious kids' meal you've ever had. Like, instead of just like
sized kids' meal.
Oh man,
it was like,
for four
plate.
Kids. Yeah.
instead of like fish fingers and chips, it was like calamari and like beautiful fillets and then chips,
prawns.
Like a nice salad. Oh man,
brought out like extra entrees.
Yeah, he did. I just remember it was just one of the best meals I reckon I've ever had.
And the guy was so genuine.
Well, it probably was the best meal that you ever
had. Oh, yeah, just because of what happened before,
yes,
yeah.
We thought you were never going to have another meal again.
So after the meal, the chef, in the meal, why kind of one of the reasons why he was so nice, he asked us where we were from and, like what we were doing and why we were so exhausted, and we explained what had happened before. So we'd just been driving up to Byron for our annual holiday, and Sam, who's a mad keen surfer, and I'm a keen bodyboarder, we decided, oh, this will be a good place to go for a surf. There was a massive wharf. I reckon it went for like 200 meters next to just a normal beach break. And at the end of this man-made wharf or whatever, 200 meters out, there was a bit of surf breaking. And Sam and I thought, oh, yeah, that's the spot we want to go in. Like, there's a bit of surf there, no worries. And so we run along the wharf and, completely disregarding these signs everywhere that said, don't swim up from the wharf. We just thought, we'll just go for a surf, mate.
We're not swimmers, no worries.
No whackers, mate. Get some barrels, no whackers, and so there was like a little beach around the corner that we paddled out from. We got round to the break. We were surfing for half an hour.
Really short, sir.
Yeah, and then it would have been about 7:30 this time. So 7:30 in summer, the sun's like getting pretty close to going down.
Rhyme shark time too.
Yeah, yeah. It started getting a bit scary because I realized that I'd been working really hard paddling for about 10 minutes.
And we weren't getting any waves as well. It was just, they weren't breaking. They were just like real fat and chat and deep.
Yeah.
Big holes everywhere.
There was like, we were just, the main thing was we were just in the same spot.
Yeah.
And then I turned to Sam and I said, oh, Sam, I think we might be in a rip.
Yeah, and next minute it picks up and like within 20 minutes it's like super strong and yanked us like super far out.
Yeah.
Like battling to paddle to get like towards inland / waves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam managed to get out of it, but I didn't get out.
You're on a bodyboard.
So yeah. So I got stuck in it. And the sun, there would have been maybe probably only 10 minutes worth of light left. And I was panicking and terrified, and I realized this could be it. Like, the sun's going to go down and I'm going to get dragged out to sea. In that moment, you're just so completely aware how at the mercy of nature you are. Mm. And I mean,
and how fragile we are.
Yeah. Mm. And I remember praying. I remember saying, oh, somehow get me in something like that. Just, it's funny when you're so helpless in that situation and you realize that you're just at the mercy of nature, you turn somewhere else other than yourself.
Yeah, me, Pip and Mama were on the long wharf. And then we see like Luke, this waving little thing in the distance, and it's Luke, and they're like, oh, hi Luke. And so we're all waving like all happy, and
he was
hello.
Trying to flag us down, and we were like,
hello! And after like 10 minutes, we were like, actually, I don't think he's just saying hi.
You 10 minutes.
And that's when we started to hear like...
You yelling,
and I couldn't really hear it at first, but then it kind of bounced over the waves, and it was just this like really hoarse help like that, and it was really panicked, and I was like, we were like, oh shit.
You sort of flipped shit a little bit.
The chef at the restaurant was like telling us a story about when we were relaying this to him. He was like, you know, people get caught on that rip and then they go to New Zealand or something.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Next stop's New Zealand after that rip, though, isn't it?
Amazingly, a freak wave came in and I managed to catch that, and that got me to the rocks. And I climbed up.
There was a local.
Yeah.
The guys came down and scrambled down the rocks and helped you back up.
Well, I'm standing up at the top being like, yeah, nah, you'll be alright.
So
getting the food like for that cheap from that really nice dude.
The fishy dish.
Yeah, just to his vibes in general and the generosity of it was a real good thing, because it was like life is so valuable type thing. Mm. Lesson of the day, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Luke and me go for a surf. Luke gets in like a dangerous, life-threatening situation in ways. But it was just so nice to have that sort of generosity to us straight after, to just be like, look how friendly everybody is, especially that, like, you know, yeah, it's good to live. Yeah. Hell yeah.
And that's the story of the fishy dishy.
That was the Gerba family talking to me about that time my boyfriend could have died, featuring Freak Waves with a side of kids' meals. Our next story was produced by Aidan Molines, and it's all wrapped up with a recipe for cucumber soup, an ivory tusk, and a Pakistani blogger from Toronto.
Okay. We need to slice the shallot thinly.
Slice shallot thinly. Place a small frying pan on medium-high heat and add 1 tablespoon of olive oil.
Add shallot. You're teaching me how to make a recipe that my mum cooks me up. A bit like a celebrity, chef.
Yeah. Peel the skin from cucumbers. Take the first batch of cucumbers.
Food for me is something which I believe allows us to tell stories. It allows us to talk about the culture, the customs, and the traditions which surround the dish which is actually on the table. And it's about the stories that are associated with it and the people that are associated with it. And for me, most importantly, it's about the stories and the family ties that go with it.
It's amazing how flavors can bring back memories.
This story starts in the basement of our old house in Fairlight, Sydney, and it goes to Nigeria in the 1980s, to Pakistan and Ireland, but it starts with this ornate Nigerian ivory tusk, which my mum really wanted to get rid of.
I'm not going to mention anything about the tusk because the conservation department are going to be on top of me.
Oh, really? We can't just...
No.
Talk about the tusk? No. Mum, I've written my whole thing about the tusk. It's too late. Her dad, my granddad, Aidan Malloy, he was a diplomat for the Republic of Ireland. Both of my grandparents died before I was born, and I was named after my grandfather, but I didn't actually get to know that much about him.
Because you do have similarities with your grandfather, Aidan, who you were named after.
Do I?
Yeah.
Like what?
Ah, a bit of absent-mindedness at times. Intellectualism.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Aidan Malloy, his wife, my mum, and her brothers moved all around the world, from Luxembourg to Hamburg to the UN in New York, all for my granddad's work. Once the kids were a little older, though, my grandparents moved to a place that was quite different. Lagos, Nigeria.
My father was representing Ireland as the Irish ambassador, and my mother went with him. And I was in boarding school at the time, and then went into university. So I would travel down to Lagos 2 times a year, once at Christmas time and once in the summer.
That's where the ivory tusk was from. Back then, in the 80s, it was totally legal just to walk into a store and buy ivory. So now, when you want to sell ivory, you have to prove that you bought it when that was still okay. So my mum went to Google and started searching, trying to find something that would prove my granddad was in Lagos at this time and bought it before the ban.
So when I did the Google search, part of the way through down the page was a blog for cucumber soup. And I was thinking, that's kind of interesting. It's kind of, you know, the way you get distracted surfing the net. The story had a little intro about Auntie Breach and Uncle Aidan.
That's my mum's parents.
And I was kind of fascinated because it was like my mum had appeared back on onto the scene again.
My mother met your grandmother, whom I used to call Auntie Breach, and they became friends, and they actually bonded. The first time they met, they bonded over food because they were sharing recipes. Hi, my name is Shema Sadat. I'm a Pakistani with Afghan and Persian roots. I'm also Canadian.
So we spoke on Skype. She has a food blog
by the name of The Spice Spoon, a visual diary of the food from the countries of my heritage, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iran. I try to tell stories which are related to food because I believe that it's a perfect way of sharing your tradition and your culture with people. My father worked for the World Bank. And one of our postings was to Lagos, Nigeria. At the time, I was in elementary school. He says that he had actually gone to attend one of the diplomatic functions at the Irish embassy. And that is where he met your grandfather, whom I used to call Uncle Aidan. It's very common for Pakistanis to refer to their parents, very close friends, as uncle or auntie.
So Shama's dad and my granddad, they both had this love of Oscar Wilde literature. You know, they would hang out at diplomatic events. So just picture armchairs, whiskey, smoking jackets, that kind of thing.
None of their children were living in Lagos. So it was a very special relationship that I had with them.
Did you kind of feel like Breach's sixth child, I guess?
I definitely felt that way. And there's a hilarious story because Auntie Breach told my mother that when she had her last child, the nurse had actually swaddled the baby and said, you know, what would you like to name this child? And she said, oh, Tom, Dick, Harry, whatever, I don't know. And the nurse said, Mrs. Malloy, you absolutely cannot name the child Tom, Dick, or Harry. And she said, why not? And she said, because you had a girl. And it was a very emotional moment for your grandmother. She, when she told us, when she told my mom this story, she got very emotional about it. I think she was just so pleased to finally have a girl. I'm sure she loves and loved her sons, but it was very emotional.
The interesting thing is, my mom had never actually heard this story before. In fact, Mum and I learned loads of stuff we didn't know.
I hope this doesn't offend you, but I do associate your grandfather, Uncle Aidan, when I was a child, with an absolutely unsavory soup. My father and I were invited by Uncle Aidan to the ambassador's residence. I remember it was a four-course meal. The first course was a cucumber soup. It was a chilled soup, and I had never had a chilled soup, and I could not imagine why somebody would invite us to their home and give us something which was absolutely ice cold. And then when we got into the car, my father said, what a lovely meal. And I said, but why would they do this to us? Why did they give us that soup? And so for me, I will always associate chilled soups with your grandfather, and that's why I actually wrote that blog post when I wrote about the Persian cucumber soup, and it was almost like an homage to the Molloy family.
I never heard anyone outside my family talking about my grandparents before. I mean, imagine that when you die, the only recorded memory of you that would be carried on to the future would come from your family. The same people you have awkward holiday get-togethers with, the same people who really annoy you sometimes, and the kind of people that you grow up to be distant from. It'd be an interesting picture of who you are, but it would definitely not be a complete one. And before I talked to Shama, my image of my grandparents was exactly that. It was lacking the substance of who they really were.
So be honest. Do you think they would have been good grandparents?
I think that they would have been amazing grandparents. I mean, the way Auntie Breege was with me, the way she used to hug me and kiss me, and she was so affectionate with me, I think that she would have been an absolutely wonderful grandmother. I think Uncle Aidan may have been the sort of grandfather that my father is. Now, my father is very doting. He adores my son, but he's not so much in terms of, you know, I think my father is going to be more close to my son when he's a little bit older. Right now, he's only 2 years old. So like right now, what he needs is somebody to play with the kiddie toys and to, you know, walk around with him and play with him outside and be on his level. But I think that the thing that my father is really going to enjoy is being able to read to him and educate him and take him to the museum and hold his hand and take him to the park. And that is the kind of grandfather that I think Uncle Aidan would have been. I don't think that he would have been speaking in baby language with his grandchildren, but Auntie Breege, absolutely. That's how she would have been. I mean, she would have been very physically affectionate, just the way she was with me.
I wish we had the video on the Skype right now so you could see the huge grin on my face.
Oh, I know. I can imagine.
When we went to India last year, we took a visit to the Irish Embassy in New Delhi. This was my grandfather's last office before he died, quite suddenly from an infection he received at a local hospital. So we booked in a visit with the ambassador, and in the whole building, there was one woman who had actually worked with him. But unfortunately, she only worked with him for about a month. I said, well, at least you knew him longer than I did. But as I looked around, you know, the joke didn't really land. But in the corner of the office that my grandfather used to hold, there was my mom with a bit of a tear in her eye. And, you know, it was a really important moment because she really did want me and my granddad to get to know each other. And there I was, making a really dumb joke about it. As we were moving out of what was my childhood home, I thought it would be nice to sit down for one last meal, that it might be nice to make the soup which Shama associated with our family so strongly.
Slice shallot thinly. Place a small frying pan on medium-high heat and add 1 tablespoon of olive oil. Add shallots and fry till a dark golden color.
I like it when everybody takes part in adding one part of the meal. Like that sort of feels like you're contributing and, you know, you belong to something. Like, you know, I was making the soup.
Take the second batch of cucumbers and garlic clove and place in a blender or food processor. Blend till completely smooth.
I guess it would always be weird when we were kids and you'd make dinner and then we'd all kind of like scurry off to our rooms afterwards.
Oh, it was lonely. It's lonely for a mum sometimes. Yeah, it is.
When you make dinner and you call everyone to dinner and then, you know, we'd all still be in our rooms 5 minutes later.
Or there'd be a fight at dinner after all the effort you made to make a nice dinner. Everybody's just arguing at the table.
This is my last meal in this house.
Oh my God, you're going to get me emotional now.
So, lived here for 18 years. We have something that you used to make us a lot as kids. We've got, you know, this cucumber soup that parents made Shima. And so I thought, I contacted your brother Liam, Mum. And I asked him, you know, what's something your parents used to make? What's something your parents used to make you guys when you were kids? So I made
Is that a pumpkin pie?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, far out. That's amazing. Wow. Oh, golly, that brings back memories.
With three generations of food on the table here.
Amazing. Amazing. So much thought gone into that. Mm. I wish my mum could look down on this. In fact, she is, I know, but she'd be very proud of you.
I've had so many amazing meals at this table so far, and I thought I would give one back. I couldn't have imagined 18 years in a more lovely home.
Something that I remember my mother said to me when I tried to thank her for things that I felt that she had given me, she said, "Well, you don't need to thank me, you just need to give it into the new generation."
And I'm talking about you, I didn't know about you then.
Yeah.
It's amazing how flavors can bring back memories. You know, it's one of the senses that evokes memories, like smells as well.
I think all these chapters in our life, they need to have some kind of rituals. There's a chapter in your life that's ending now because you've been 18 years in the family home and you're now going out to seek your fortune in the world. And, you know, it's nice to have a ritual that celebrates that.
That was Aidan Molines and his mum eating cucumber soup in their old kitchen. If you want to find out more recipes and stories from Sharma's blog, head to thespicespoon.com. We'll put a link up on our website. First dates, especially first dinner dates, can be so nerve-wracking and confronting. Do I have spinach in my teeth? Should I have ordered the spag bowl? No! You don't order spag bowl on your first date. It's way too sloppy. But who am I to say? Melbourne author Bambi Smythe went on 75 first dates with different men from 24 different countries. This man-eating tour took 80 days. Bambi gave producer Beck Fiery an appetizer from her book, Men on the Menu.
I've had more dates than I've had hot dinners, so, you know, I'm glad I've had a variety. But now, even after 75 dates and, you know, a number before that, before I traveled, I'm still not quite sure what I want. The man I'm going out now is a total opposite to the rhubarb crumble and the total opposite to the, you know, one before. So I'm still looking.
Does your current partner have a dish to match him? Have you figured that out?
You know, I actually haven't. He's a very, very private man. He's a bit older than me. He's very, very conservative. It'd probably be something like a good, heartwarming, dependable lamb roast with gravy and veggies on the side, you know, and tasty, but safe and dependable. Nothing too spicy, you know. Anyway, so then at the end of my time with them, or at the end of the country, then I would evaluate all the foods I'd had, the dates I had, and see who matched. And I generally got pretty good matches.
Did you have a meal with each man? Was that always a meal?
Absolutely, always a meal. So it had to be the local food that I ate. But, for example, in Brazil, I was there for 4 days. I had 3 dates. I didn't find out the food for my first date until my last day there. For example, what I ate with him was a soup. He wasn't a soup. He wasn't a sweet. He wasn't anything like that. So on my last day there on my own, I went to a barbecue steakhouse. And I'm sitting there eating and I thought, that's Paulo. So it sometimes took a couple of days, but it was always a local dish. But then again, when I was with Stefano in Rome, I had the dish as I was with him, and it was a doppio espresso coffee because it was hot, dark, full of flavour, and gave me heart palpitations. So that was the perfect scenario, as well as the perfect date. So he matched, a food or substance when I was with him.
Food can be the perfect metaphor.
Well, I think so. And I think my very first sort of statement was, well, if a food can be sweet or salty or spicy or bitter or rancid, so can a man.
So let's categorize them the way we categorize food.
Yeah. So let's go out and it wasn't that cut and dry in the end, but certainly, if at the back of the book here, I've got the full menu. And it's very revealing on who I met, Switzerland, Ali, bouillabaisse.
Quand il l'attendait sur la plage, il regardait pour tuer le temps, les cortèges ventripotents qui défilaient sur le rivage, les vieilles tartinées de crème.
I went to a very posh place with a banker. As one of my dates, and he said, he said, now Bambi, I've brought you here to the Wolseley, which is a very famous place in London, so you can have, they're very experimental with English cooking, anything you like. I ended up having a pork roast, because I wanted to be, he was such a quintessential Englishman that I actually thought, he's going to be a pork roast, he has to be, he's very sweet and rich and, a little bit of stuffing in the middle, he was perfect. So
no, they all have their flavours. And then the dish of the day was when I came back to meet Greg, and he was an apple and rhubarb crumble, sweet with occasional tartness and bite, a pinch of cinnamon for a spicy kick, and a macadamia coconut crumble on top for a bit of nuttiness. Cooked to perfection, not too hot, not too cold, and very nourishing. Or else I could just be rude, Thierry in Monaco, a waffle, dry, all air and no substance. So you can be quite brutal, or you can be quite descriptive, I think, of a man's personality through food.
Like a, mad passionate love. It's an amazing champagne. It's just intoxicating. It's bubbly. It's just effervescent. It's sweet. It's light. It's amazing. But, maybe an everlasting love is like a lovely, warm port or something very deep and rich that has depth and flavour and, I think
champagne bubbles go flat, so
there we go. That's perfect. Well, that's true. I think men, and this to me, they're like a smorgasbord. There's an awful lot of flavours out there, and at a smorgasbord, you have to have a little nibble of nearly everything.
So otherwise, you don't know what you like.
No, exactly. And in my problem in my youth was that I was looking for spicy. I was looking for fun, adventurous, wild. Crazy nutters rather than nice stodgy meat pie that would sit at home and, have babies with me and everything. So I don't know, I don't have a very good track record for longevity. Let's just say that in the smorgasbord, new dishes are always brought to the table. So, who knows what's going to happen next week.
That was Bambi Smythe talking to All the Best producer Beck Fiery. Obviously, with 75 dates, that wasn't even the half of it. If you want more man-eating metaphors, Beck's published more of their chat on our blog. You can find it at allthebestradio.com.
When we first started talking about this episode, I really wanted to do a whole piece on spag bol. It's got a legacy in my family. My grandma served it on a plate and separated the meat from the pasta. My parents were more traditional spag bol makers. And then there was this one time my brother thought it would have been a really good idea to put sweet chili sauce in the mix. It sucked. I wasn't the only one. There were at least three others who thought there was a whole segment in it. Everyone feels like it's their dish in this amazing, weird ownership battle of the spag. We decided to give Michael a call. For him, it wasn't spag bol, and he didn't think of anything straight away, but then...
This girl that I work with, she brought in a packet of Dunkaroos. Do you remember those things? They're like these tiny little kangaroo-shaped biscuits, and you dunk them in like this chocolate dipping sauce. It's all in the one package, and I didn't even know they still made those things. I had not tried them since primary school. And the memories came back of like being a kid and opening up your lunchbox and thinking that it's just going to be like a dirty white bread Vegemite sandwich and getting Dunkaroos and having...
What's the smell or taste that takes you back? Tell us about it. Send us some audio. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, or allthebestradio.com. Thanks to Aidan Mullins and Beck Fari for producing the stories on today's episode, and special thanks to the boyfriend and family for reminiscing on fishy dishes. This episode of All the Best was produced in FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan. My co-host is Michael Bryden, and I'm Pip Rasmussen.
Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. I hope you're keeping well. It's the 21st of December. Now they're ringing the last bell. If I get good behavior, I'll be out of here by July. Won't you kiss my kids on Christmas Day? Please don't let them cry for me. I guess the brothers are driving down from Queensland, and Stella's flying in from the coast. They say it's gonna be 100 degrees, even more maybe. But that won't stop the road. Who's gonna make the gravy now? I bet it won't taste the same. Just that flour, salt, a little red wine. Get a dollop of tomato sauce for sweetness and that extra tang. And give my love to Angus and to Frank and Dolly. Tell them all I'm sorry. I screwed up this time. And look after Rita. I'll be thinking of her early Christmas morning when I'm standing. Here Mary's got a new boyfriend. I hope he can hold his own. Do you remember the last one? What was his name again? Just a little too much cologne. And Roger, you know I'm even gonna miss Roger. Cause there's sure as hell no one in here I wanna fight. I'll break the baby. Have a Merry Christmas. I'm really gonna miss it. All the treasure and